Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Under the Shell, presented by Terrapin Sports Central. I'm one of your co-hosts, Cavett Ireland, and I'll be joined by
Sam Jane,
Brendan Weissel,
Michael Big Mike House.
And on today's episode, we'll be previewing some games from the upcoming weekend, and we'll be taking a look at the upcoming winter sports season with men's basketball, wrestling, and even a little bit of gymnastics.
We'll also be joined by Rivals correspondent and editor of the Maryland site, Terrapin Sports Report, Scott Green. So that he'll be talking with us about some men's basketball coming up this soon here for the Terps.
That's right, Cav. It has been getting cold, you know, some of the Maryland air up and down. So winter sports time.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to talk about some of these programs.
Yeah, College Park Hoops is just around the corner. But first, let's take a look back at action from last weekend. Huh? Sam, you want to kick us off with some football?
Yeah, so the football team came away with a pretty gritty but also sloppy win against Northwestern. Billy Edwards had to step in for the injured Talia Tegavaloa, who suffered an MCL or re-aggravated an MCL injury that he suffered at Michigan the week prior against Indiana. A lot of teams in that sentence. But yep. Edwards, you know, he game managed. He had to rely on a strong ground game as Roman Hemby. Guys, when I look at some of the top backs in the Big Ten, you got Blake Corum, you got Travion Henderson from Ohio State and Michigan, respectively. But I don't know why Hemby can't be considered in that top conversation for the backs. I mean, the guy had three touchdowns, one Big Ten Freshman of the Week this week, his second honoree of the year so far. How have you guys thought Hemby's stepped into the role, and what has he done to not deserve that, you know, that top five running back in the league?
Yeah, I know. A metric that's often looked at is how valuable a player is to their team. And you can look at accolades, you can look at how many yards they had, how many touches they had. But Hemby for Maryland this year has been their most valuable player. And so knowing that, and I think that Maryland doesn't beat Northwestern last week if they don't have the game from Hemby. And so knowing that, I would say that he's definitely has to be considered as one of the top running backs.
Yeah, I mean, his acceleration really has been the big thing. I think when he sees, he's still working on his vision. There are times in the games where you see the offensive line blocks a hole, and he sometimes slams up into the middle and doesn't really, you know, recognize a hole that's opening up. But when he sees it and he hits it, his acceleration is probably second to none in the Big Ten. Really, that ability to go from stop to go is super impressive, and I think that's what makes him such a big play threat.
And I think, of course, Hemby's been great. He's been the lead back. But you also got to talk about how Antoine Littleton has been a great complement to Hemby. He's had 309 rushing yards this season. He had that great game against Michigan State where he had 120 rushing yards and a touchdown. So I think those two combined, I mean, he was out against Northwestern, but those two combined have created a great rushing attack for the Terps.
Yeah, I actually asked Hemby about that in the post-game press conference against from Northwestern. He talked about how, you know, adding, you know, the loaded workload for him, like increasing his workload, is something that with Littleton being out was something he had to get used to, but he was just grateful to be able to get those carries, and he knows he has to produce with those. And I think having Littleton take some of the wear and tear off Hemby has allowed him to be that explosive runner, especially, and help prevent some of those injuries that we see the Terps suffered a lot. Obviously, Talia, the big one, but Jayshon Barnum was out against Northwestern. You had other guys along the way. So, Cav, what do you think this bye week, which is coming at a much-needed time for the Terps, what do you think that'll do for them?
Yeah, I think Loxley's lads are going to get a much-needed rest. You know, Talia's going to start rehabbing that knee. I would like to say the Billy Edwards fan club application season is officially closed. Yeah, we're going to have to jump back into next week. We'll see the Terps get back on the field, and
yeah,
should be an exciting one.
Wisconsin, Camp Randall, that's a big-time environment. The jump-around thing is super dope, if any of you guys have been out there. And it'll be really cool to see that type of environment because, Lord knows, and fortunately not at the old Secu Stadium do they have anything such as the jump-around. But Tully is expected
they
to
got,
play.
They got Rock and Roll Part 2, which has made a small comeback.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And they have the flag thing, but it's not the same. It's not the same as Camp Randall, just the environment.
Yeah.
So
also, Maryland has never beaten Wisconsin in the history of NCAA football.
Yeah, that's wild. And Tully is expected to play. Loxley said today, we're recording this on Tuesday, he said that Tully is expected to play, but he's still day-to-day. So
There's a long time between now
and then. Yeah, so I would think he would play, and I think that'll be a super interesting game, and we'll get more into that next week, because that's a game I think that could really define the Terps season. Another season, though, that has been really, really big time for the program in terms of almost a slide has been the volleyball team. And Brendan, you want to talk about them because it's not been looking pretty so far.
Yes. if you want to talk about a slide, the Maryland women's volleyball team went right back to their old ways. They had their three-game winning streak. They started to gain
after the Twitter foul.
It's true. Thank you for mentioning that. They had the three-game winning streak, starting to build some momentum, and they lost in three straight sets to Northwestern, who they'd beat a week earlier. And that really just shows they couldn't adapt. You know, you go to Northwestern, you beat them 3-0, and you let Northwestern come here and beat you. No mid-game adjustments. It's hard. Another loss during the weekend to Penn State. Also lost in three straight sets. They're a ranked team. That's a win that they weren't expecting to get. So in the upcoming week now, face Iowa on Thursday away. And that's a game, if they're going to get their confidence back before facing third-ranked Nebraska, that's what they're going to have to do. Iowa's 1-9 in Big Ten play right now. So they've had a similar record to Maryland. Maryland has 3 wins in Big Ten play right now. So hopefully Maryland's hoping that they can play well against Iowa to get some momentum. But other than that, not too much to say.
Yeah, what do you think about the head coach? You think he's on the hot seat? What type of performance is he going to need to keep his job?
You know, I think it's hard to say. The only real interaction I have with him face-to-face is in the post-game press conference, and he's not really saying very much. He's saying pretty classic stuff. I would say that it's hard to know because Big Ten is such a difficult conference for volleyball. You look at the record outside the Big Ten, and they're a pretty decent team. They still have a winning record because of that. They have, you know, 6 or 7 losses now in the Big Ten, and they're still 12-2. It's still 12-10. And so because of that, I think he's probably not on the hot seat because of their ability to win games out of the conference. Yeah. But it is disappointing for fans when you cannot get it done in the conference.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would agree with some of that, but I'd also think Adam Hughes is being paid to win in the Big Ten. That's the you're supposed to win games in conference.
Absolutely.
So I don't think he's necessarily destined to be fired, but I think the seat's getting a little warmer.
Surprised if he didn't keep his job after this season, but in the coming seasons, if the same results over and over again happen, you could see a new head coach.
Yeah, a guy who's not on the hot seat, though, is the Maryland men's soccer coach, and the boys have been buzzing Cav lately, except for...
he's on the coldest seat in the country, probably.
He's established at this point.
Yeah, Coach Sasha, I mean, he's been around for 30-plus years, so... I don't think he's going anywhere other than if he decides to depart. But, men's soccer, they looking forward to the postseason coming up. Just going to close out the season against Indiana in Bloomington for a Big Ten matchup. And let's see if the Terps can get hot right before the postseason with a victory as they work for a higher seed and a potential first-round bye. Last Friday... Terps were able to beat Michigan State in their most recent Big Ten matchup, thanks to an early William Kulvik goal, which was the decider. The rest of the match was a bit of a deadlock.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't allow a single like shot attempt the whole game, which is something that's wild to me. So, I mean, their defense has been locked down. How do you see that type of style translating to postseason play? And do you think they can get away with that type of, you know, great defensive performance, but also kind of a little bit of a lackluster offensive game from the boys?
Yeah, in my opinion. Like this was a bit of an out of character game for the Terps, because usually we see them always pressing on the front foot and maybe sacrificing a little bit defensively to go for the goals to try and fill the opponent's net. But this one was a little bit weird because, you know, they got up early and they were still pressing for that goal, but Michigan State's defense was also able to neutralize the Terps after the 13th minute. But I think going forward in the playoffs, once they hit the postseason, I think it is key that Coach Sasha keeps the boys, keeps their identity true, and they want to keep playing the game that they've been playing all season, you know. Got to stick with the horse that got you there, so it's going to be exciting.
Can you just talk quickly about what the Indiana game means? Because for those of you who don't know, if Maryland beats Indiana, they win the Big Ten championship and a regular season. If they lose, Indiana gets it. So how much does that get? How important is that game for the rest of the season and building momentum? And do you think if Maryland loses that game, it's a detriment or it's a way to kind of look themselves in the mirror and get ready for the postseason?
I think on paper it might not be as big as it seems, but momentum-wise and emotion-wise, this is huge. You're fighting for Big Ten rights. You're fighting for bragging rights. This is a conference title, and you definitely don't want to let it slip in the last game of the year. And taking this game going into the postseason, getting that first round bye, getting that home playoff game would be huge for College Park and the fans, the UMD crew. They would just be absolutely buzzing. If they were able to take the Big Ten Big Ten title, that would they would have all the fans in College Park at their backs. And you just it's like they're proud to say Big Ten champions going into the playoffs. It's like, we won the Big Ten, now let's go for it all.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with Cavett. You have a chance to, you know, win or take all game. It doesn't matter, like, if you don't make the, like, oh, this game, even if we lose, we're still making the post. You got to win that. I mean, that's like, you get to bring home hardware. And anytime you get to bring home a chip, that's something that's super, super valuable and super prideful for a team.
Yeah, and it also helps with getting, you know, being able to host some games in the tournament, which the crew, obviously, would look forward to. So from one possible Big Ten regular season champ to a definite Big Ten regular season champ, let's talk about field hockey.
Not so definite anymore after last Friday's loss to Penn State.
They have a share.
Slice of the pie.
With that being said,
Maryland field hockey does not go for shares.
Brendan also hates regular season trophies. But
are you serious?
On. Yeah, Patriots fan.
Oh. Lions fan, I get no championships.
After that loss, Penn State now also has a share of the Big Ten regular season championship. And because of the win, Penn State also has the head-to-head tiebreaker over them. So it seems as if Penn State will get that bye game in the Big Ten tournament. So unfortunately for the Terps, it looks like they will have to play the same amount of games as everybody else. But that was just a tough loss for the Terps. They lost 5-1. They started the game on a roll, scoring first with Danny Van Rootselaar scoring in the first 4 minutes of the game. But then after that, they allowed five consecutive goals, including a three-goal second quarter. So that was pretty tough for the Terps. But now they got Virginia on Wednesday to look forward to. Virginia, they're going to be a tough opponent. They're number five in the country. But I think Maryland should be able to get this job done. They're not as tough as opponent as Penn State. They're 7-5 against ranked opponents in 12 games. So they have played a tough schedule. They are battle tested. And every one of their losses is against a ranked opponent. But the offense is not as good as Penn State. So I think if Maryland just gets the offense going and isn't stalled like they were against Penn State, they should be good. Forward Hope Rose is back. She played her first game back from injury Friday against Penn State, so look for that to get the offense rolling for the Terps. And then after Penn State, they're going to be traveling up to UConn on Sunday for their season finale.
Yeah, really tough schedule here, and it should get them just completely prepared for postseason plays. The good thing coming out of that, but the bad thing is now if they lose a couple in a row, Mike, what do you think that does for team morale?
Well, I mean, after the Princeton game that they lost in overtime earlier this season, Coach said that kind of like set them on a roll. Ever since then, they've won every single overtime game that they've played in. Coach said that like losing that Princeton game allowed them to see what they did wrong and how to improve. So I feel like maybe the Penn State game, that will have the same effect as the Princeton game. They'll see what they got wrong. They'll see how the offense was stalled and how to prevent that going forward in the future. So, I mean, any lost game, that's not fun, but you try to take the positives from a negative, and I feel like they'll do that just as they did with the Princeton game.
So, Mike, you know, we have the Big Ten tournament, and then we have the NCAA tournament. Prediction of what seed they're going to get. What do you think they'll be ranked after the Big Ten tournament?
So right now, they are still number two nationally. The poll just came out today.
So they kept the second ranking
after
the loss.
They kept the second ranking after the loss. Penn State, they jumped two spots ahead to number three, but the Terps are still number two. If they win that Big Ten tournament, unless, I mean, North Carolina loses a game, they're the only undefeated team still left in NCAA field hockey. That's why they're number one. But I feel like the Terps should stay at number two if they stay undefeated through the Big Ten tournament. And then look for them to go deep in the NCAA tournament. They went to the Final Four last year. They have a far more talented team this year with transfers Danny Van Rootselaar and Leah Kraus. So expect a deep run for the Terps from the Terps in the tournament.
Yeah, as we've said all year, Maryland's field hockey team is going to be their best chance to win a national championship in the fall. And so they're going to be a team to keep an eye on.
Just the start of a dynasty. Mm-hmm.
So before we do our picks for this weekend, let's talk about some of the upcoming seasons for the winter. Yeah. Women's basketball. You know, Sam, it was a pleasure to be alongside of you. For all of you big-time Terrapin Sports Central fans, you might have got a little look at the transfers. But, Sam, now you have a little more chance to say what you want to say. So what do you think?
Yeah, you know, I think this women's basketball team, it's a pretty fascinating team. I mean, you bring in 9 new players to any squad. You kind of think of that as like a rebuilding year.
Or, it's like an expansion team. It's crazy.
It's wild. And they lost some big time, you know, 5 out of the top 6 scorers left last year. And that's something that, you know, is pretty surprising to a lot of Terrapin fans. But it'll be a whole new roster to look at. I mean, I think that the big thing is the transfers have been harped, right? But Diamond Miller is going to have to play a huge role. I mean, she's going to have to take that next step to become that alpha scorer, alpha leader. And I think that the thing is we'll know kind of early on about what this team has or doesn't have. I mean, I think the South Carolina game, I was talking with the SID, and it's looking like a pack type of game. I think a lot of Terps fans will show up for that one against the reigning national champions at home in College Park. So that'll be a big time game. Women's basketball definitely is a pretty popular thing here in Maryland. And so I think when you're looking at a game like that, we'll know which transfer might have it and which transfers might not. And then I would just look the Big Ten. It's got some talent, but I think that, you know, there's room to be had at the top. Caitlin Clark at Iowa is obviously a stud. She's one of the top 2 players in the country. But there's not really any other dominant teams. So I think the Terps are up in the upper echelon. But I think the thing that could hold them back, and Brendan, you kind of want to talk about it, they lost some size with Allie Kubek, and they really have no size. So it'll be interesting to see how they play in terms of what styles do they implement. Do they run a 5-out offense? Do they really try to get out and transition and run? What do you think that lack of size can – how it's going to affect the Terps? Because I think that's going to be a big-time storyline to watch.
Yeah, I think the lack of size, it's going to be tough. I think what's going to be even harder is the lack of chemistry. If you've looked in the past, you know, 10 years across men's and women's basketball, which teams have won the national championship or been very strong, or teams that have a lot of seniors, and so or people that have been on teams for a while. And while we have a lot of that, we don't have people who have played together for a while. Teams, you know, in college basketball now, especially in men's basketball, will bring in a lot of one-and-dones. And those teams have a lot of star potential. They have a lot of, you know, Zion Williamson going to make a crazy dunk. You have that. But you don't have teams that win the national championship because when they get to those tough moments, they really don't stay together as a team, and that's when they lose games.
Yeah, I think that's something that's such a good point, Brennan. Especially in women's basketball, you get to see players like, there's no leaving to the NBA after the first year. You get to see people like, you know, grow up and kind of mature throughout their college years. And this team, they don't really have that. Like, they're just bringing in a bunch of new faces. So that's kind of a fascinating storyline, is how do the fans respond to that? And what does attendance look like? Because you can't really get to know these players. You know what I mean?
And you know they're going to be gone in a year.
Right. So it's like, how do they respond to a Lavender Briggs or Abby Myers? Like, Abby Myers and Brené Alexander named team captains today, which is something that's super interesting. But how do the fans respond to those players? And I think that'll be a really cool thing to watch, Cabot.
Yeah, I agree. Just based on like the general concept of building that team, having a team stick together for a few years to build that winning culture, build that championship squad, especially with the sport of basketball, 5 girls in this case on the court at the same time. Like, there's no hiding. You are 20% of the team when you're on the court. So going to have to build that chemistry if they want to make a run.
And just to go on to Brendan's point about, you know, chemistry and all that, Zion Williamson's freshman year, when Duke was expected to win the tournament with RJ Barrett, Zion, Cam Reddish, they didn't win. You know who won? The Virginia team led by Kyle Guy, who lost the previous year in the first round. They had that chemistry. They stayed together. And yeah, they had DeAndre Hunter, who was there in his freshman season. But they were there together. They had that chemistry built up, and that's why they won that championship.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, they'll get to see it early on, because they'll face a championship caliber team. South Carolina, UConn, Baylor, those are all teams that are perennial national contenders. A team that I think is also kind of, you know, a very fascinating storyline. Yeah, so today we're lucky to have on Maryland Rivals writer and editor of the site, Scott Green, who is a correspondent with Yahoo Sports, who's going to talk to us a little bit about Maryland men's basketball and previewing the upcoming year. So, Scott, what do you think led to Mark Turgeon's departure last year? And is there anything you can tell us about what went down in that situation and what led to him exiting the doors?
So, not being with the program anymore, I mean, it basically just kind of came down to he kind of didn't like the way he felt he was being treated by the fan base. And, you know, I actually happened to be at the game right before, you know, he stepped down or fired him. whichever, whoever you want to believe, whatever you want to believe, however it went down. But, you know, there were, he was audibly being booed. You know, he says there were some fans that said some not nice things to his family after the game. And, you know, unfortunately, I think it was just time. You know, while the teams were good while he was here, you know, he made the tournament most years, and, you know, they did win a Big Ten tournament, or excuse me, a Big Ten regular season title, shared one, I should say. I just feel like the expectations at Maryland are to get to the second weekend of the tournament and win, you know, a conference title outright. And those things just didn't happen. So that's kind of how that went down. You know, I think it was very probably rough on everybody, and as well as just a little bit awkward having Danny Manning take over, considering that Danny Manning is one of, you know, Turgeon's best friends. And, you know, they were together at Kansas way back when they were in school. And it was just kind of an awkward transition. I think it was really hard on everyone, you know, at media day, talking to some of the players. You know, they pretty much were open about how it was not just rough, but, you know, I think kind of awkward. And, you know, guys didn't necessarily like the way that they were playing, the style of play, who was playing. And I think, you know, bringing in Willard, bringing in the assistants he did, and just kind of starting fresh is what this program needed. And guys really seem to be responding to, you know, what he's trying to do.
What play style do you think we can anticipate from Kevin Willard? What do you think he's going to implement with the squad?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at Willard, I mean, in the past, he's been one of those guys that basically plays to his players' strengths. So I don't know that he really necessarily has one style. You know, I mean, he's a Patino guy. So, you know, defense is a hallmark of his teams, as are being able to really shoot the ball, or at least wanting to be able to really shoot the ball. But, you know, if you talk to the players now and you, you know, talk to Willard and the assistants, I think what they feel like they need to do with this particular group of guys is they need to get out, run the ball, and just try and get up as many shots as possible. So I think you're going to see them really push the tempo, and, you know, really look to get guys open on the wings and, you know, try and get 3-point shots up on the wings and try and get as many points as they can out of as many possessions that they can, and, you know, try and win that way while also playing some good defense. But I'm not sure that that'll be his style all the time moving forward, but I think that's what you're going to see this year, a team that really likes to push the ball and shoot the three.
Yeah, so speaking of this fresh group of guys, how do you think the play styles of new transfers like Jameer Young and Don Carey are going to fill the void that was left by graduates Fats Russell and Eric Ayala?
Yeah, I mean, you know, as far as Jameer Young, I think he's without a doubt probably going to be the best player on the team. He's a guy who can really, really kind of do it all. You know, he can really handle the ball. He's got good vision. He can shoot it. He can attack. You know, he can get downhill. He can draw fouls. And he shoots at a high clip. So I think he's a guy who is going to be, you know, what makes this team go. You know, as far as Donald Carey, you know, you talk about Don Carey, he's a guy who shoots the three ball at an extremely high clip. But he's more of a 3-and-D kind of guy. You know, you're not going to see him really attacking the basket, you know, like you would someone like Jameer Young. You know, with that said, just from talking to some people through the first couple weeks of practice and also talking to the players, I wouldn't be surprised if actually Ian Martinez actually ends up starting at the two, with Don Carey possibly coming off the benches, you know, that first guy, that first guard and that spark, you know, kind of the microwave who hits some big shots for you. But it's going to be interesting to see, you know, who gets the start of the two between Ian Martinez and Don Carey. But I think Carey definitely fits in with this group. And I think, you know, 3-point shooters is something this team definitely needed.
So Maryland is lacking up in size up front with inexperienced but talented Julian Reyes heading that center position. How do you think he's going to hold up clashing the Big Ten with guys like Hunter Dickinson, Zach Edley, and Tracy Jackson Davis?
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much touched on it. I mean, he's really more of a stretch four, a face up four, that's being asked to play the five. So he whether you want to admit it or not, he's basically being asked to play out of position. You know, that said, you know, having seen him the other day, he's put on a lot of muscle, and he's, you know, he's added some weight, good weight, but he's definitely added some weight, put on a lot of muscle. So I think he's going to be a lot more capable of really banging inside at the five this year in the Big Ten. Like I said, though, you know, I think he's still more of a natural you know, face up four pick and pop guy. And I think they'll use him in that way. It's really just going to be, how is he going to be as a rim protector and be able to defend in the paint? And, you know, and the biggest question I think for this team, without a doubt, is who's going to be able to spell him and really give them some valuable minutes backing up the five? Because at this point, I'm not really sure who you got who can do it.
Yeah, definitely. And we see Willard trying to add some more depth, especially, you know, coming from recruiting, he's trying to add a lot more size and athleticism, it seems. And the class of 23 is looking good so far with two top 100 kids coming from the DMV. How do you think his philosophy, or what is he doing that's so much more effective in terms of recruiting that area that differs from what Turgeon did?
Yeah, I mean, as far as local recruiting, I don't know so much that it's anything he's doing that's made him more effective early on. But the one thing that's totally different from the previous regime, you know, under Turgeon, is that, you know, his assistants now are guys that are from this area and extremely plugged in. You know, you talk about Tony Skin, you know, he's a guy who coached for Team Takeover, you know, played at George Mason. I mean, he knows everyone in this area as far as, you know, grassroots hoops goes. And then again, you talk about a guy like David Cox, again, coach for DC Assault, you know, now DC Premier. I believe at one point he was even the assistant principal at St. John's. So, I mean, these guys are about as plugged in as you can get as far as the local AAU scene and the top local high schools. And those connections pay off huge. I mean, I can tell you right now, it paid huge dividends as far as getting Deshaun Harris-Smith. You know, his coach is good friends with Tony Skin. And that's just kind of how you get guys in this area, especially the top players. It's who you know, do they trust you, and, you know, do they think you can get their guys to the next level? And I think the group of assistants that Willard has brought in, and you know, showing what he's been able to do with guys at Seton Hall as well, has just really resonated so far.
Yeah, certainly seems like Willard's trying to build that culture that he really wants to implement with the squad. So KenPom has Maryland finishing at 10-10 in the Big Ten. Do you see them over or below that?
I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, I think, you know, in most years, I feel like I'd say they might finish below that. And again, it's just because I'm just not sure about the depth in the interior on the front line. That said, I feel like this is a weaker year for the Big Ten. You just don't have a lot of stars like you did last year. You don't necessarily have a lot of the experience you had like you did last year. So if ever there was a year where you were going to have a team who might not be as good as you were hoping, but might have a chance at you know, overproducing, I think this year might be it. So, you know, taking into account Willard's ability to work with what he has and kind of play to his team's strengths, I'm going to say that with this being kind of a down year for the Big Ten, I think they have a shot at being better than 10-10 this year.
So, Scott, last question. So, is better than 10-10 or wherever they are, does that get them into the tournament, or is it another year of missing out on March Madness for the Terps?
I feel like this one's tough to answer right now, but I'll say this. Whereas in, you know, the last few years under Turgeon, the way the scheduling went, it was basically that if you lost a game you really weren't supposed to or shouldn't have, it basically puts you on the bubble right off the bat. I mean, right, you start off behind the eight ball, you know, as soon as the season started and out of conference play. This year, you look at the schedule, you know, you've got Tennessee, UCLA, you know, you've got the tournament they're going to play in where they're going to play, you know, probably Providence, Miami, maybe. And they're going to have a lot more opportunities to get marquee wins that they're going to want to see in March. So I think if ever there was a team that was going to have a chance to get a marquee win or two that's going to help them come March, you know, when they might be on the bubble, they've got the games to do it this year. So I'm just going to take a chance and say they're going to beat one of UCLA and Tennessee, you know, win at least one of their games in their tournament. And I think if they do that and they go 10-10, let's say, in the Big Ten, I think that's probably enough to get them off the bubble and into the tournament. So I think they've got enough talent to make the tournament this year.
Yeah, it'll be not only exciting but also nerve-wracking time. I think that Maryland, coming into the season, pretty squarely on that bubble watch, which can be both exciting and also incredibly frustrating for fans. But thank you for joining us and talking a little Maryland hoops. And it'll be really interesting to see how all these new pieces fit under new coach Kevin Willard.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks, guys.
Cabot, what did you think about what Scott Green had to say about this team? And can you give us kind of a short preview for what you're looking for in terms of the squad this year?
Yeah, I thought Scott had some very interesting things to say about the especially the incoming transfer students, you know, Jameer Young and Donald Carey. Exciting, promising students, promising players. Fresh new look for the Terrapins backcourt. So, like, Jameer Young, very reliable from the charity stripe. Going to lean on him for that in those clutch moments. He shoots a career 83% from the line. Then we got more of a 3-and-D guy in Don Carey. He's no stranger to the bucket. He's a career 39% three-point shooter, so almost bridging that 40 mark. I thought Scott had a lot of interesting things to say, especially that he believed that the Terrapins may beat or will beat one of UCLA or Tennessee, was it?
Yeah, Tennessee. That's on a neutral court, so that, and UCLA is coming to College Park, so that is something that I think, I mean, fans are going to pack the building for UCLA. Yeah. I mean, that's going to be the biggest game of Willard's tenure to date, and so I think if you're going to get one, you're going to pick off a big-time opponent in non-conference. Jaime Jaquez is a stud, but that'll be a really cool game to watch in terms of what Maryland does against them. So, Cav, what do you think, tournament or no tournament for the Terps?
I think they're going to make the big dance.
Going with the big dance?
I think they're dancing.
In Willard's first year.
In Willard's first year. He's making a statement.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that's going to rely on sophomore Julian Reese. Going to have to take a big step forward. He's going to have to take some of the pressure off Dante Scott. He's going to have to bang around in the paint and just get those gritty buckets for the Terps.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's going to be something that's super interesting to watch.
So if I may make a prediction about if Maryland will make the big dance, I'd predict they will not.
Boo.
Willard is not proven. The team really doesn't have enough superstars to win some of those big games and get themselves out of some of those slow starts.
I feel like it was just not a short while ago. We were talking about how it's all about a team,
To be fair to Brendan, though, they are bringing it. They got a lot of new traction. I mean,
that is a very good point.
The guy who's returned, their oldest guy is Dante Scott, and Hakeem Hart's coming back, too, which is, those are kind of the two veterans. But are those guys just are what they are at this point? Are they really going to improve that much in, you know, in their fourth year? Like, how is that going
to? And the player we're looking forward to the most, Julian Reese, I mean, he's a big question mark on how he's actually going to perform in this big-time role that he's going to be put in this season.
Right. Like, can he really shoot the three consistently? Is he able to stretch out the defense? Because he's not going to be able to hang with Hunter Dickinson down low. So you have to make him pay on offense by hitting a couple threes. Is he able to do that consistently enough to where he's a net positive on the floor?
I feel like this season to look forward to is next season. I know that's, like, is not fun thinking about that, but, like, next season with the recruits he has coming in and the culture built after 1 year, I feel like next season will be really fun to watch. Again, this season is going to be fun too, but I feel like next season is a year where it's like, all right, we know we're going to make the tournament this year.
How Mike, deep you might as go? Well predict the weather, man.
I agree with what Mike is saying. It's not Willard's team. Most of the people on his team are not, none of them are his recruits, and so it's really, really hard to coach a team of guys you didn't bring in. For the players, it's hard. For the coach, you're giving them. When a player was recruited by a different set of coaches, it makes it hard.
Yeah, and I think this year, one thing you can count on is the Under the Shell boys will, you know, you might see us on TV a couple times. We're all basketball guys, so it'll be interesting.
Not
to
on
watch.
The court. Let's make that clear.
Oh, no,
we'll be packing.
I mean, don't
Eppley at orientation.
Don't let Sam Jane and Kevin Ireland get high. I mean, they call this kid Kevin Ireland Pistol Pete. I don't know necessarily if it's for his passing ability, but, you know, he likes to call himself that.
Hey, walk-on day is coming up soon, guys.
So yeah, I mean, that'll be a really fascinating season to follow.
Yeah, Cav. So from one team who's going to be getting dirty in the paint to another, let's talk about wrestling.
Yeah, taking over to the mat. The wrestling team is led by head coach Alex Clemson in his fourth season. They had a 7-win season last year, taking home 7 meets. Coach Clemson led the squad to 3 NCAA qualifiers so far in his tenure. One wrestler to watch this season is Jackson Smith, who won the U.S. Open Pan Am title and took 5th at the U20 World Championships this summer. Jaron Smith is another wrestler to look out for, who last season went to the NCAA Championships and ended up going 1-2 there with a win over Utah Valley's Evan Brockman. Last season was a bit disappointing for the wrestling team as a squad. They went 0-8 in Big Ten, but looking to turn things around this year.
Yeah, I mean, wrestling is not my area of expertise, but we will be tuning in and watching how the boys are doing on the mat, because it's been rough the past couple of years.
Which one of us do you think would be best on the mat?
Me, I used to wrestle.
I think I'm last.
No, Brendan would get absolutely snapped in half. I think the rankings, if I had to power rank it, Mike, you're just kind
of... We can power rank the next sport we're going to talk about as well. I'd like that.
Yeah, Mike, you're a lover, not a fighter, so I'm going to give you third, and then it comes down to me and Cav. And Cav...
I used to wrestle.
I would love Cav in this matchup.
You have like 30 pounds.
Yeah, I have the size. Still,
pound for pound, I like
I'll hit you with a blast double and put you on your ass, and we'll see what happens from there.
Plato, 6'4", tonight? Question mark?
Yeah.
All right, bet. Let's get it going. But anyway, it'll be interesting. If you want to throw bets, though, Brendan Wiesel in track would be runaway favorite.
I'll throw my track rankings at the end of this little segment I got here. So from one very disappointing team at University of Maryland to another very disappointing team, let's talk about the men's and women's cross-country and track team. So Maryland doesn't have a cross-country team, so nothing to talk about there. The women have their Big Ten championship on Friday in Ann Arbor. Probably won't go too well, if I'm being honest. Last season, they finished last in the Big Ten Championship, and they've shown nothing to me that would prove that they would finish better than the bottom three. It is unfortunate. I'll talk about that a little bit more later. The one member of the team who had a very strong high school season and a very good outdoor track season is Katie Alteri. She's led the Terps most of the season, and so she's hoping to have a big meet. Just a little bit of a thing here. While I explain this to you guys, so there are some members of the men's team who compete like unattached at cross country or indoor track meets, and one of those is Anthony Petrillo. So he actually was on the Penn State club team, and he walked on to the Maryland team. So he's competed in some unattached meets, but really the men's cross country and indoor track team, they practice with the team, but they don't compete under the University of Maryland with their jersey that they wear, other jersey, and so they don't actually participate for them, but they are on the team. So now talking about the women's indoor track preview, I'm going to set a goal for them, and that's to score some points at the Big Ten Championship this year, because last year they were unable to score any points. And then just predictions for track in the future, just my general take. I don't get to talk about track that often on this podcast, so I'll give you my few cents. I think that in the future, they may have a slight upgrade in their ability to recruit and train, because they are getting a new track at some point in the future. It's not exactly clear based on the website. But right now, one thing that does really hurt them is that they practice on at Ludwig Field. And so Ludwig Field during these months has the stands on them for the soccer team, which is blocking lanes like 1 through 4. I know I was at the Midnight Mile, and we ran the Midnight Mile, Cav and I, and you couldn't run in those lanes. And so just for workouts, like general morale, it's just like, you know, you walk onto that facility and it's like half of it's being used. Lowers morale. And so that can be a positive. And just like general recruiting, Maryland as a state is a pretty strong track program. Maryland does genuinely usually recruit from Maryland, but they're unable to get some of those top recruits. So that is something that could possibly help when they're doing a tour looking at those facilities. But
yeah, if the Terps want to compete, they got to be able to keep talent from the Northeast, you know, in Maryland and that type of thing. We can't be having recruits going out to Stanford and competing. If listeners know.
Yes, very fun fact about Stanford track and field. The head coach of the University of Maryland's daughter competes for them. So that should tell you a little bit. But to your point, I was doing a little research and looking, comparing the 800-meter times for Maryland High School and the University of Maryland. And despite one high school runner who's incredible and actually running at Stanford, whatever, they're pretty much the same. Like the top 15 times in the high school and top 15 times for Maryland, not that big of a sample size, but they're pretty much the same. So we're not getting that talent and or developing that talent to be that strong.
Yeah. It's going to be super interesting to watch how the resources are poured into Maryland track. But if you had to look at times for the four of us, Brendan, how would you power rank this?
Give me an event.
The 1 mile.
I like myself to win the mile. Thank you. but I'll go from the other direction. So I'll go fourth. With all due respect, Mike has coming in last.
It's all good.
Your day of vengeance will come, Mike.
Yeah, it's all good. I mean, we can look at the pick standings later.
Yeah, we can. I like,
and we will.
I think if we were maybe doing a theater performance, you'd take us.
Oh, thank you.
And so then it comes down to who's second and who's third. And I've really only ever seen Cav run. But knowing what I know, I'm going to take Sam second place.
Wow.
Cabot third place.
I'm just a competitor. I get stuff done.
Brandon, I ran a 6:20 mile.
I ran a 6:19.
And I think Sam can run faster than that.
I mean, when you're looking at a guy who just – when it's on the line, my heart, I drag it all out. I go 125 freaking percent.
126 so. Sometimes, once in a while.
Yeah, so it happens occasionally, and Cav.
There'll be more on this later.
Yeah.
You're forgetting I have the footy legs as well.
That's a good true. Point. But
baseball legs. People don't talk about that.
People don't talk about that.
Because they don't exist.
It's true. That's why they don't talk about it.
So Mike is...
This guy was also a pitcher.
Mike's been ranked towards the bottom of all these rankings. The thing he's not at the bottom at is the picks. All
right. So we're going to the pick standings right now. I'm at the top 4-2. Then you got Sam and B-Wizzy tied at 3-3. And Cavett, his strategy of going off the vibes last week, going against all of us, that worked out well. He went 2-1. Now he's 2-3-1 on this season. So
I love the 2-3-1 record. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Best record in all of sports.
So I'm going to start off our picks for this week. First one I'm going to go is Michigan favored by 21 versus Michigan State. Michigan's coming off a bye week where their last game they absolutely demolished Penn State 41-17. Six of their seven games have been won by double digits. And on the flip side, the Spartans have lost by double digits in every single one of their losses, including a 34-7 loss to Minnesota and a 49-20 loss to Ohio State. So expect number 4 Michigan to do the same, covering the spread. Next up, we got Oklahoma State, underdogs by 2 points against Kansas State. Oklahoma is ranked number 9 in the country, while Kansas State is ranked number 22. They're coming off a week where they were underdogs against number 20 Texas, and they ended up winning by a touchdown, and they'll do the same here. Like TCU, who Kansas lost to last week, the Cowboys have an electric offense, averaging 44.7 points per game. Kansas State was leading 28-10 against TCU with 20 seconds left in the first half when the Horned Frogs went on to score 4 unanswered touchdowns to win the game 38-28. Expect Kansas State to put up the same defensive performance here, like, you know, starting off strong, and then towards the end of the game, the Cowboys offense breaking their back as the game goes on. And last up, we got Missouri, underdogs by 4.5 points against South Carolina. Mizzou has kept games close this year. They're 3-4, but the margin of their games actually has them winning on average by 1 point. They're also 4-2 against the spread. When they played number 1 Georgia earlier this year, they only lost by 4 points, falling 26-22. In comparison, the Gamecocks lost 48-7 when they played Georgia.
And now for my picks. I think I agree with Cavett, not to steal his thunder, but I very much just go off how I feel. Vibes, if you will. I'm not going to steal his line, but I just did. Okay, my first pick.
Thief.
Sorry. My first pick is Ohio State minus 15.5 versus Penn State. Why, you may ask? I think Ohio State's going to win by 16 points. I don't think they're going to win by a certain amount, but I think Ohio State knows it's a big scale Big Ten matchup, and they're going to come out of the gates flooding. And Penn State hasn't shown me too much against big opponents to show that they're going to play that strong. Second pick, Syracuse minus 3 versus Notre Dame. Syracuse coming off a loss in a season that they had extreme potential to do some damage in the ACC. They're going to be fired up. Notre Dame's not been very good this year, so I like Syracuse. And then great pick, one of my favorite picks the whole year, strongest, most confident pick I've felt since picks, is New Mexico State versus UMass, and I have New Mexico State minus 2.5. Both those teams are very bad, but
who's going to be watching it?
Me. I'm going to stream it. The one thing to know is that UMass has averaged 12 points per game, and that's not many points. And because of that, I think that they're going to let up. They're going to lose by more than 2.5. So 3.
At least 3.
That concludes my segment.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you, Brendan. That last pick was probably one of the most inspiring things I've ever listened to.
There's going
to
be a Sam Jane-sized hole in the podcast studio.
Let me tell you something right now. I'm going to be a lot more inspiring than that clown sitting next to me. You got Arkansas minus 4 versus Armin. Brian Harsin out the door, basically, at this point. The Tigers, they've got no heart left. Their coach is on the way out. And KJ Jefferson is an absolute dog. He can spin that sucker down the field, and he's also built like a tank. I love Auburn, or Arkansas minus 4 against Auburn. Then you got Nebraska plus 7 versus the Illini. Illinois, probably one of the most overrated teams in the country, in my opinion. They're going to win the Big Ten West because the Big Ten West stinks. But Nebraska's kept it close even after Scott Frost has been fired. And so I'd love to see how the Huskers do against the Illini this week. Brett Bielema, I think keeps it close with that running game. But I like Nebraska to cover plus 7. And then lastly, I got Middle Tennessee State is, you know, getting points against UTEP. But 1.5 for UTEP, I think they easily cover. The Utes are somebody that I've looked at all year, and I've rode them. And so seeing them cover 1.5 against the Raiders is something that I think is bound to happen. So I went 0-3 last week, but I'm getting off the schneid this week and going 3-0.
And now for my picks. Going off vibes, UNC -3 versus Pitt. Why? Because why not? Next pick, Florida State -24 versus Georgia Tech. The Ramblin' Wreck is nothing but a mess this year, and Florida State, they just might be back. Sam Jan, I'm out for blood. I would like to note that the line moved to -3.5 in the Arkansas-Auburn game.
Don't care.
However, Auburn +3.5. We can expect a repeat of the kick six. I'm just letting you know.
That was the fun. Tide. But you know what? That'll be something interesting. You did
I beat know, me but last it's just week. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Yeah, we'll see. But nice. you did have that win against me last week. But I'll be watching that very closely when we're sitting together watching college football on Saturday. We will.
Based on your look, Cav, I thought you were about to take UMass +2.5.
I was thinking
about that. That would have been so funny.
Aren't they also the Minutemen?
Yes, they are.
They are.
That's okay. Super.
There's a lot of Minutemen.
You know, somebody who's been a super significant contributor to Terps history is somebody Michael Howes is going to talk about.
Yeah, Sam. So some of the listeners may have noticed that there is no swimming team mentioned earlier in the winter sports preview. And the reason for that is that there's not one at the University of Maryland. It sounds crazy, but that is true. Well, in November of 2011, Maryland athletics were facing a huge deficit. The two major teams, the football and men's basketball team, were not hot at the moment, with the Terps about to rebuild, with Gary Williams retiring, and Randy Edsall leading Maryland to a 2-10 season.
That's not a lot of leading going on there.
2-10, not too hot for Mr. Edsall. and that was his first season at the helm of the program. So in July, a commission was formed to see how Maryland could improve its financial situation, and their recommendation by November was to cut 8 sports, including the swimming and diving team. Yet, they still had a chance to save their teams. If they raised $11.6 million by June 30th, 2013, the swimming and diving teams would be saved. Unfortunately, they would not meet that goal, and they were cut. Now, this is a shame because many talented swimmers hail from the DMV. Katie Ledecky, Michael Phelps, Jack Conger, and Mike Barrowman are all Olympic swimmers from the state of Maryland. So in honor of the swim and dive team, swimmer Annie Fitton is today's terrific Terp for this week. And let me tell you something about Mrs. Fitton. Setting records is what she did. She holds the University of Maryland record for 50 free, 100 back, and is a part of 4 out of 5 relay records at the University of Maryland. That is 7 records at the University of Maryland. Her senior year, the 2010 through 2011 season, she received honorable mention All-American, All-ACC academic team, and was the team captain. So congrats to Annie Fitton for winning this week's terrific Terp, and hopefully Maryland brings back the swim and dive team.
Yeah, I think that having that is something would be really cool to see bring back, especially with all the Maryland talent that's, you know, accumulated for swimming.
Mm-hmm. Gotta get the turtles in the water, eh?
Is that the quote of the day?
Not the quote of the day, but dun dun dun! New segment alert. Quote of the day. So I stumbled upon this quote from the late great John Wooden, legendary coach, and I decided that, you know, this kind of sums up Maryland's athletic programs right now. Maryland has some teams all across the board, some with a lot of wins, some with a lot of losses, some just middle of the pack. So the quote is, "Success is never final, and failure is never fatal." Thank you, John Wooden.
Appreciate you, John. Long live the UCLA famous coach.
Rest in peace.
And long-time NCAA champion.
Right. Long live this podcast, baby. Mm-hmm. That's another episode. Episode 5 down the drain. Cavett, take us away.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to Under the Shell, presented by Terrapin Sports Central. As always, enjoy your month.